Welcome, welcome everyone. And this is Vertical Live Radio with Global International African Arts Movement. I am your host, Celeste Duckworth, along with entrepreneur, writer, and co-purveyor of the Global International African Arts Movement, Patrick Howell. Our intro music was Take a Look by Marcus Gameface Boyd. And Marcus, hey, shout out to you. Thank you for contributing some of that great indie music to Vertical Live Radio. And our conversation today is on Afrofuturism, America, and politics. I'm happy to be having some great guests today. And the conversation of Afrofuturism, in fact, CNN says, and for those of you who have seen the movie, that Afrofuturism, this genre, is what made Black Panther the success that it is today. And as early as W.E.B. Du Bois, who actually wrote a science fiction book called The Comet, then we have Octavia Butler, my hero, my mentor, Samuel Delaney, and more have pushed this movement into literature, music, and art, featuring futuristic or science fiction themes that incorporate elements of Black history and culture. And I don't know, for those of you that have been watching Netflix has added some really great programs that are part of this Afrofuturism. One is Black Lightning, and there's a new one that will be coming on the horizon in the next year. So our conversation, though, is part of what one commentator has said, that, African Americans may well find their future and, the things that create a thriving culture in Afrofuturism. So let me introduce our guests today. Our guests are poet, essayist Ishmael Reed, author Yatasha Womack, founder of, and actress Tori Reed. And we're gonna get with them quickly, but I'd like to say hello to Patrick. And how are you doing today, Patrick?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. Excited about this conversation.
Man, if there's a street on the north side, they wouldn't be talking.
Let's tell me what's the most exciting part of the conversation. Have you seen Black Panther yet?
Yeah, I've seen Black Panther on three separate occasions now. I saw it with my son and a group of his friends in school, which was a very diverse group of students, actually a diverse group of students from his classroom and also his swim team, and got to see their reaction firsthand on the opening day of the movie, and also got to see it on two separate occasions. The last time I watched it for myself, and was really excited about how the future is manifesting itself in Hollywood, which a lot of times I have great critical things to say, but in this one case I had nothing but exemplary things to say about how Hollywood, or the industrial Hollywood complex, as I call it, is projecting itself out to the world and really being true to the reality of the past 5,000 years.
I would agree with you there. I haven't had a chance to see it a second time, but definitely was just beyond even my expectations coming up as a kid that likes the comics. So it was just truly amazing. And I'm also a fan of when I was writing some things, I didn't know that there were a lot of African-American writers who were out there, not only African-American writers, but even some writers from other minorities that were writing in the Afrofuturistic genre. And it was just really opened a lot of creative expression for me, finding out these authors and just really poring over their books. So this is a great conversation for me as well. I think the movie, in a way, brought to the forefront this movement that's been around for a while. And now we're even introducing a new generation to this movement, which I think is wonderful. So let's introduce our first guest, Patrick, who is Ishmael Reed. Would you like to introduce Ishmael Reed for our listeners today?
Sure. It'd be my pleasure to do so. When I was at the University of California, Berkeley, I had an opportunity to do my first national writing for the Quarterly Black Book Review. And Ishmael Reed was very gracious to offer some of his time to an aspiring writer and cultural and social critic, and gave me my first big break in speaking with him. But more specific to today in our conversation around Afrofuturism, his novel was nominated for the Nebula Award by sci-fi author Jose Farmer in 1967. He hasn't had the chance to see Black Panther yet, but the work that he created in the 1960s are really the foundation of what has come to the forefront of the American public. And that's how we do what we do generation after generation, in respecting the ancestors and those who come before us. We build on the foundation that they created. His movie opens on March 30th in Canal Street. Perhaps his best-known work, Ishmael Reed's, is Mumbo Jumbo, which came out in 1972, the year I was born. It's a sprawling and unorthodox novel set in 1920s New York that has been ranked among the most 500 most important books in American history. In many ways, he's the godfather of the satirical novel, and many of the novelists, such as Mr. Whitehead and Mr. Betty, who have won national book awards in recent years and won a lot of acclaim for their books. Their material was predated by Ishmael Reed, the same way that, you know, LeBron James is predated by Michael Jordan, is predated by Dr. J. We look to the greats that come before us to set the standard and the tone for what can be created. So it's an honor to have him on the show today.
Great. And Mr. Ishmael Reed, are you on the line with us today?
There we go.
Hello? Okay. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, so. Okay, so we may be waiting for him to call in. We might be waiting for him to call in. Introduce our other guest. Who do I have on the line? Let's just see who I have right now. That's my number, 6725.
That's me, Tori. Tori Reed.
Hey, Tori. How are you, Tori?
Hey, I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being on the program today.
Yes, my pleasure.
So let's introduce Tori. Patrick, and we'll get that started. Let me check and see who our other guest is today. A caller whose last four numbers are 0465. Hello, there might be a listener there.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
great.
Thank
you for being a part. Yeah. Introduce Tori.
Yeah, Connie Briscoe, who was a New York Times bestselling author from the 1990s, and somebody that, along with Bevan Moore Campbell, really set the tone for me and the current aspirations that I have, invited us into a pilot program that she had for creating your own novel. I'd had something in play for about maybe 20 years as I was working on Wall Street and the financial sector, and decided to take advantage of the opportunity. And Tori Reed was also in that group at the beginning, even though that group was primarily for fiction. And so I recognized her as being the outstanding talent inside of that group, and have had the opportunity to review some of the chapters that she has from her memoir, which is woken me up on many a day, being extremely inspirational. Her forthcoming memoir chronicles a 21st century woman's struggle to come to terms with herself and fulfill her highest possible purpose. She is also a producer and a film festival coordinator. She is the daughter and sister of Hollywood insiders, and with a strong background behind the camera, Reed has made the transition in 1999 when the Hollywood Foreign Press Association selected her to be 1999's Miss Golden Globe. So it's been a pleasure to work with her, understand a little bit more about how Hollywood works, but even more importantly, the amount of energy that goes into self-care and self-love, and how we must love ourselves in order to create our highest possible selves.
Awesome. Wow. Well, welcome today, Tori.
Thank you so much. That sounded really good, Patrick. You're going on the road with me.
All right. we're already down that road.
So, Tori, have you seen Black Panther yet?
Oh, gosh, yes. I saw it first weekend. I'm one of those funny people that, you know, I believe in supporting black films first weekend only if they deserve my support. So I'm not going to go see, you know, some chucking and jiving first weekend because I don't want them to continue to make those. But I will see films that are quality, and that was Black Panther. So I saw it first weekend. And, I mean, the show isn't long enough to say what they did right and the power and influence, you know, that it has. It's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. There's an article on IndieWire, and it says that the name of the article is something like, is the success of Black Panther hurting other films? And I just got a kick out of that because that says so much. Yeah. And basically in this article, what they're trying to do is have people stop seeing Black Panther over and over and over again. But they're like, they're basically saying these other films, they invested a lot of money, go support these other films. They need your support. And it's like, wow, this is an interesting day because I don't ever remember in my lifetime people urging people to stop seeing a black film and to go see other films, primarily white films. So I just got a kick out of that. Yeah, that speaks volumes to me.
Well, I think there's a hunger. I mean, I think there's definitely a hunger in the popular culture for this type of a movie, and I think it's been building since the beginning of the Black Arts Movement. The only thing that I have as point of reference in my mind for what this movie might be or might have been 30 or 40 years ago would be Shaka Zulu. And this is with, you know, without the independent film nature of that. This is a full, robust, matured Hollywood creation. So there's definitely a hunger and an appetite for not only this movie, but many more movies to come inside of this genre and this image.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, what are you doing now in Hollywood, Tori? The last thing I did was coordinating a film festival. Interestingly enough, I'm no longer an actress, but I'm actually coaching actors and helping them with their just development and teaching them and sharing with them the good, bad, and the ugly. So I've been doing that along with focusing on my book. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. I'm actually going to go to Richmond early summer to have an acting workshop. So that I just kind of fell into that. That's not something that I said, you know, those who can't teach, wasn't my interest, but people started coming to me and saying, you know, you grew up in the business, you know the business, help me, teach me. And so that's what I've been doing. So they wouldn't, you know, I don't want anyone to lose their soul, sell their soul. It's unnecessary. So that's what I'm spending my energies with right now.
Wow. So I'm a huge binge person when I have time to binge. And I've noticed that there's been an increase of more black-oriented programs. One of the things I really do like about Netflix is that even foreign films, they seem to be in the forefront of being able to have that offering on there. You know, on their platform. So, you know, what do you think is going to be some of the advantages of this, you know, insertion of Afrofuturism? Because now I understand there's a couple of screenplays in place right now. And also it was interesting because I was talking to a young lady who had been kind of working in an acting career, and she went and saw Black Panther, and she told me, she said, this just really inspired me to dig in harder and push myself into acting. And I was like, wow, that was really amazing.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything like that from maybe young black individuals that are wanting to go into acting or in film?
I've heard more so that from creatives, so writers, producers, mm-hmm. directors. Everyone is fired up, ready to go. Actually, we've been ready to go. There just hasn't been an opening. But there's so many mm-hmm. platforms now. And I just heard, I think a couple of days ago, someone told me Viacom. Viacom is looking for Black projects, people of color. Like, that is their thing. So they're scrambling to try to find that because of the success of
wow.
Black Panther. So I think that's mm-hmm. what people that I've been talking to are doing. It's like they're dusting off their scripts, breathing new life into it, trying mm-hmm. to get meetings, just getting their projects out there. So there has been, mm-hmm. you know, there has been new energy. And I think it's so important, these types of films, the effect of Black Panther, because it's at the end of the day, it's spiritual. The message, the feeling,
right.
and mm-hmm. as Black people, you know, it's people always say, see it so you can achieve it. But Black people, we feel, you know, other
right.
people have to see, hear, and then they feel somewhere down the line. Black people, we're all about mm-hmm. vibration, frequency. So I think these types of projects and films, such as Black Panther, that was such a spiritual film, the energy. And I think that's what everyone of all ethnicities and colors are affected by. It's that spirituality, mm-hmm. you know. And I think those type of projects are going to keep coming because of the success of this film.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's like a small group, maybe not small, but there's a group of people that are against it because of the effects that it's having on individuals, kids. I mean, people are just feeling like we had it somewhat with President Obama with Yes, I Can, Yes, We Can. We had some of that, but this is on a whole nother level. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like people
yes.
are really
mm-hmm.
believing
yes.
in themselves. They're loving themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is what I'm all about. And, you know, they're taking pride in their culture and their skin, the color, you know, just all things.
Yeah.
Black and African.
Yeah.
I was talking to my dad, and he told me Ethiopians are claiming the film. Like, they're saying that's us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I would say is that for me, because I consider myself one of the griots in my family, and we've done a lot of our family history, but, you know, I was always a little militant that I got kicked out of school a few times for not being assimilated properly.
Nice.
And
good
I
for
remember
you.
that my uncle gave me a lot of books on anthropology. That was my first love in school. And so reading about Africa and Egypt and Ethiopians and reading, so when I went to see the movie, and so,
mm-hmm.
you know, I go to the movie and I'm watching the movie, and there was a point that I just wanted to cry. And it was because I was looking at it and I was thinking about all the things I learned growing up in my family and just things my uncle gave me to read. And I was thinking, man, this was just to see it come to life in that way. Okay. Because in my heart, I'm saying so much history about us that people miss or that they don't know. And what you said,
yes.
It was truly spiritual. You're right about it. It's truly
yeah.
spiritual. So I imagine that there's a lot of people that probably felt the same thing. So one of the things, though, you're right, one of the things I did say when someone was talking about Black Panther, and I said it's not about money. It's not about, you know, it's an all-Black cast. I said what it is. I said it's
mm-hmm.
about the ideal of empowering people.
Yeah. Yes.
I said it has empowered people on so many levels.
Yes.
You know. And all the things that Hollywood said about having a movie with, you know, such as this with a Black cast, that it couldn't do, you know, some of the things they were saying. And I'm like, it far exceeded that. Now what do you say?
Oh, yeah.
What do you say?
Exactly. Yes. That's right.
Right.
Well, somebody who I think would have a really strong opinion on all of this is the author of the critically acclaimed book Afrofuturism, The World of Black
mm-hmm.
Sci-Fi and Fantasy Culture. Yatasha Womack, mm-hmm. Who's an award-winning producer, director, and author, and innovator, and is mm-hmm. able to join us on the show right now. So I believe she's here right now. Yatasha, are you here?
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
All right, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Natasha.
Thank you. Thanks for being on the program today.
No, thanks for inviting me. I'm always excited to have a conversation about Afrofuturism and Black Panther and all the great change in store.
Indeed.
Fantastic.
So, I noted that
they're
you were
on the radio.
The, most famous.
Hello.
I think Ishmael Reed has also just joined us as well.
Okay.
Ishmael?
Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Ishmael.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm on a smartphone here. I'm just doing rehearsals here for a play of mine.
Okay, you're doing the rehearsal for your play over in New York, right?
Yeah, auditioning, yeah.
Okay, well, it's wonderful to hear your voice, sir. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, we did an introduction to you earlier, so the audience is aware of your work and how you and I have worked before in the past. We also have Yatasha Womack, who is the author of Afrofuturism, and then Tori Reid, who's coming forward with a memoir in the coming months. And it's an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on the show.
Okay. I noted earlier in the introduction that your first novel was nominated for a Nebula Award by the sci-fi author Jose Farmer in 1967.
Right.
You had mentioned to me in the article that we co-authored that Black fiction is at a crossroads. I wanted to know if you thought that direction was positive or negative.
Well, I think it's positive in the fact that artists are using new ways of telling stories. Like, carrying on tradition of Sun Ra, who was not only aware of tradition, I mean, he could go back to stride and ragtime and all this, but also looking forward to the future. So I think that I forgot his name, he wrote his Afro Black for the Future. You know, is that the article you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
This writer from Yale University said that blacks have to look forward to technology and more for the future. Well, that's a given. I mean, if you look at Sherry Thomas's Dark Matters, the science fiction anthology, you go back to Du Bois, to others. There's always been this tradition, and it also shows a lack of awareness of black scientists and astrophysicists like those at NASA, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a talent there. He just didn't know about it. And I think if Black Panther, with his big success, could do something practical by maybe touring with a number of astrophysicists, black astrophysicists, to show young black people that they can get into these fields too.
Yeah, good point. That's a great point. Great point. It did show that. It's like I said, in so many levels, it created such an empowerment. I'll say an empowerment pulse that went out to everyone that saw that. That there's just, and I think we have these individuals in these areas. We just don't get the information doesn't trickle down. I don't feel. We pull it out of these little obscure places.
Well, that's because the media in Hollywood confines, black roles to stereotypes. So if you pick up a newspaper, you see all the black people on the fourth page. When there are a number of people in the sciences and the cerebral industry, but to expose those people or to showcase those people would be a threat to the notion that blacks are intellectual inferiority, which is like the sort of like psychological heroin that gets everybody hopped up in this country.
Interesting.
Yeah, psychological heroin. I like that. I like that expression.
Yeah. Prior to having Ishmael introduced on the show, Yatasha was speaking, so I would love to have her feedback on what she thinks about the Hollywood industrial complex and the effects of the counter effects of Black Panther on that, and how she feels her book, Afrofuturism, The World of Black Sci-Fi and Fantasy Culture, you know, how that book is being received right now, how it's actually been in formulation, as Ishmael Reed had said, since the formulation of Sun Ra, and some of those movements in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, well, it's exciting because these kinds of stories have existed for some time, even if they weren't published and widely distributed. And I think what the film Black Panther did was, for a lot of people, was it gave them this massive visual on a global scale that really created an opportunity for them to see Afrofuturism in a very multi-layered way. So while many people were kind of familiar with it, or had some, even if they weren't familiar with the term, they were familiar with some of the concepts, they hadn't seen it on this scale, certainly not in a global way where it was so widely received. And I think that just had a big impact on a lot of people who were not, say, core comic sci-fi Afrofuturists, right? I mean, I think for kind of the Afrofuturist sci-fi crowd, this was like an exciting moment, of course. You know, they get to see their favorite characters on screen. They get to see a lot of ideas kind of play out. And I think for people who never thought of themselves in that way, the whole experience was a little shocking. I think it was shocking because they felt, one, I've never seen these images like this before. Two, I never thought I would see these images to this degree before. And three, I didn't know a film could have this kind of impact on my life. And four, you know, which I think most of the world is probably contemplating, why haven't I seen this before? I think a lot of people probably felt almost robbed in a way, where you've had 100 years of cinema and you haven't seen images like this on this scale, which isn't to say you didn't have other films and projects that people, you know, created before. So, you know, Black Panther in that sense, I think, is very much a response to the fact that there is a healthy independent community and a healthy demand to see more diversity in sci-fi. But even more importantly, it's a response to the fact that you have so many sci-fi creators who are attempting to meet, you know, the demands of audiences who want to see more diversity. So I think for creators such as myself and others, you know, this is kind of a great time because it's like, oh, you want more Black Panther? Look at all these other exciting works out here that you can read and build on. And, oh, look, there's a history of this. You know, this isn't entirely new conceptually. And so I think in that sense it had a big impact.
Well, I think also, too, for creative individuals, I think that, and, you know, all of you as creative individuals, I think there's something in our, you know, and I even say because we've talked on other shows, Patrick, about creative individuals are really, you know, these are, it's really a gift. It's like you can't, you can't learn it, okay? the information you get to give out. It's something that truly is spiritual. And I was reading where DuBois, you know, when he wrote the comment, you know, one of the analogy in there was that the race imbalance was so entrenched that only a catastrophe could bring equity. And, but also I would say for many of us, when before the Afro, I won't say before it started, but when we started writing in this genre, it was a little bit of escapism and a means to find a place where we could be, you know, these narratives that we didn't see in our history book or wasn't being taught in school. So would any of you agree with that and go further with that?
I would absolutely. I would think that all the participants on today's show in one way or another have demonstrated – I mean, I look at what was created with Black Panther, and I just look at it as a love letter to the diaspora. And I think that goes back directly to Tori's point early in the conversation that, you know, we're a spiritual people. We are part and parcel, if you were to ask me, and my humble opinion, of the Holy Spirit. And what we do is we create real time. And so, as you had mentioned, W.E.B. Du Bois mentioned that there, you know, would take a catastrophe. Well, the catastrophe occurred in late 2016 mm-hmm. and 2017 with the election of, you know, a despotic lack mm-hmm. of spirit and complete mm-hmm. total materialism. And so this film represents the work combined of what Tori is coming forth with and is coming forward with, what Yatasha is creating in her forthcoming film, Barstar City, and what Brother Ishmael Reed is creating right now in New York City with Tennessee Reed, his daughter. All those works are coming from our spirit because we understand the depravities that are taking place right now with inside of our national community. And so,
yeah,
you know,
I like to get in plug for our film that's opening at the Metrograph Theater, 7 Canal Street, March 6th,
mm-hmm.
next week. We did it for $40,000
yep.
in 1981. And we didn't have the technology that's available now, but the Jake Curlin, that band at the time, Brooklyn Academy of Music, Film Division, sort of like brought it back. I had about 52 tapes in my attic in a trunk for 35 years. So now,
mm-hmm.
after showing at Lincoln Center, it stars Brother Mike Grosvenor, who was considered too dark at the time to be a leading lady,
mm-hmm.
so-called, you know, at the time, using vernacular Hollywood. So now it's 2.5 hours long, and it's been restored by Tino Lerber. So it'll soon be available, you know, at Netflix or one of those outlets since it's been picked up in this company. So now the technology that was not available was used to enhance this film. So now we have very little money. We have talent. We have Tom Moore, great composer. Bill Gunn directed. Vladimir starred. Walter Cotton starred in it. He's a co-star, Sam Wayman, who's Nina Simone's brother. We have a great cast of young people at the time. Now you can rent that equipment for $140 a day. You can rent an $82,000 camera for $140 to $180 per day. So we're part of a black film tradition that goes back to 1999.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these independent filmmakers weren't waiting around for Hollywood to act right. You know, I just don't think they're ever going to get it right. They may come through with something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once in a while, but I remember Walt Disney's being not to sympathize with. I mean, his stamp is on this film. So I think you can do a lot outside of the Hollywood system, and I think that's the direction that independent films are heading with the less expensive equipment than we had in the 1980s. So I think that anybody who has a small budget and can rent this equipment, like, you know, these cameras that cost thousands of dollars, can make a video or a film. So I think that's going to be I think Hollywood is like a bejeweled dinosaur that's not aware that a meteorite is about to hit. And that's what's happening. And I think we have to really think about independent movies outside of the Hollywood system, because those people are the same people. They NAACP, Walter White, Lena Horne, all kinds of people try to get them to change. And they didn't. Now, this black, 125 black companies, everybody knows about Oscar the Show. There were 125 black film companies between 1909 and about 1952. As a matter of fact, one of the holdovers from the race film, they were called race films because blacks were actors were able to define themselves. Jim Wright was in one of the last ones, Soul of a Friend, and we had him in our movie. So that's our connection to that tradition. They went out of business in the 1950s because of Sidney Poitier and people like that becoming successful in Hollywood. So I think we should continue that tradition. People badmouth Booker T. Washington a lot, but in 1912, 1913, some of those early films were made in Tuskegee. They were uplift films.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to ask the question, and any of you can come in and answer that. One of the questions I have, because the program we're talking about, also we're talking about America and politics. What does Afrofuturism look like to you when, in terms of politics, we have some elections coming up?
The play I'm auditioning right now is the Afrofuturist Project. It projects to the future what happens after this crime that we have in office right now. So I have the theory of this play is that if blacks get reparations, whites will receive most of the money. That's a serious, it's a serious comedy in the fact that blacks have been used or exploited by the capitalist system. So the programs that are allegedly taken or meant for blacks go to whites. That includes Social Security. That includes the Great Society programs, War and Poverty, affirmative action. White women get affirmative action. So I'm saying, given this case, that blacks, they put a black face on programs that go to whites in the majority, either FHA, federal housing loans, or that if reparations come out, most of the money will go to whites. So, I mean, that's a twist in this place. So we have a comment named Dr. Rockman. This is a takeoff on George Scholar's science fiction work, Black No More. That's way before this kid from Yale wrote the manifesto about Afrofuturism. I wrote an introduction to an edition of George Scholar where, you know, this doctor, the scientist, finds a way to convert, get black people to turn white, get the formula for blacks to turn white. I mean, it's a comedy. So I have that update where I have my account manager, Dr. Crockman, turning whites to blacks so they can get reparations. And the people who sign up first are neo-Nazis, so they learn there's $50,000 involved. So that's the comedy.
Okay, all right.
So it opens in June.
I wish I could be there. I wish I could be there to see.
Excuse me. From May 31st to June 24th at the New the famous great New York and Ford Cafe downtown New York. What's the address?
Okay.
236 East 3rd Street. And it's going to be directed by the great Ron Neal, who directed all my plays and got me the Adelco Award a couple months ago, prize in theater.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Excellent.
Wow.
So let's work outside of Hollywood. Let's work outside of Hollywood. You don't need a multi. The amount of money that we made out there with is the amount of money they spend on catering in Hollywood.
I think we've already started. That was beginning a few years ago where more and more of the young black filmmakers and some of the producers were saying, you know, we can do our own thing. We can move. We don't have to have Hollywood's approval or backing. And looking at some of these programs that have been coming out, good quality programs, great storylines. We have some great screenplay writers out there. I mean, just really some awesome ones. And more and more filmmakers, writers like Yatasha and that are out there. And with Corey, with you doing your thing and teaching a new generation that, hey, you don't have to sell your soul, that these are all things that are pushing us to a better way of doing things. And I think that, you know, and we have the audience. That is the thing that, one of the things that I said about Black Panther, we have the audience. We have the we have the financial backing and power. We really do. And I think I think that we're beginning to see that we have that, you know, even
but
with the numbers that were coming back.
But you still have a screenwriter's guild that's like Mississippi in the 1940s. You still have a lack of, you know, writers and Hollywood. That's one thing the black independent filmmakers like Oscar Michaud did. He did Charles Chestnut's novel, House Behind the Cedars. Now, when James Baldwin went to Hollywood, he was rejected. I don't know if he read The Devil Finds Work, where he was abused. They considered his script of Malcolm X to be too inflammatory. James Baldwin, to his credit, he tried to organize his own film company with his partners doing comedy. But he always had a problem with Hollywood. He had a problem with theater. And it took a toll on his health because of that. So I think that I just think that maybe once in a while you might get a Black Panther, or you might get, what's that, Mr. Tibbs? What's that movie called? With Sidney Poitier playing Mr. Tibbs. What's the name of that movie with Sidney Poitier plays the Harvard criminologist that goes south? And, anyway, once in a while you get something like that. And The Heat of the Night. I mean, that was a very shocking role he played, where he gets to slap this Southern patriot, you know, and good line. But that's once in a while, you know. So I just think that Hollywood is passé. That's my opinion.
Okay. Yatasha, don't you think there's more opportunities out there for writers to, especially
no.
writers of color, to come forward?
No.
You don't think
no.
so?
No,
what do
you
think, Natasha?
You got to read Cecil Brown's novel, Days Without Weather. Cecil Brown is a friend
mm-hmm.
of mine. He wrote Richard Pryor's best movie, Which Way Is Up,
uh-huh.
about the where Pryor plays a militant. He is very disillusioned. He started making his own film. He and I co-produced a movie called Trooper about academic politics, which was in some of the festivals, Berlin and other places. But he just became so disillusioned about Hollywood that he wrote this novel called Days About Weather. If you want to buy copies, they're all in my Facebook about the remainders. But there's been a critique. And even Amir Glasser, we talked about one of his books called Sidney Poitier's Heroical about Hollywood. He did a piece on Hollywood. But he did his own film, too. As a matter of fact, there's a film about the New Eureka Poets Cafe where Pinheiro, in which Amir Glasser appears. So, you know, it'd be great.
So let's bring Natasha Womack. It's called Pinheiro. Let's bring Natasha's voice into this conversation. Where we've been in the 60s and 70s, leading all the way through to right now, Brother Ishmael Reed, you've been powerful.
I have to go back to my audition. Thank you very much to all the guests, and thanks for having me on, okay?
God bless you. Thank you,
okay,
brother.
Ishmael, thank you.
Okay, take care. Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Yeah, that was awesome to get that perspective. You know, Ishmael Reed is amazing.
Yeah.
He's just made, you know, all of those perspectives are so important, because I think people need to recognize that that Black Panther is part of a longer lineage of work that people have been writing and, you know, writing in a lot of cases against the odds and showcasing in circumstances where they were kind of marginalized for creating works that were so edgy or creating
mm-hmm.
works that people said didn't necessarily have conventional audiences. You know, right now Afrofuturism
mm-hmm.
is very cool, but saying those sorts of things 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, years ago, depending on how you were talking about it, could make people feel very isolated. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book Afrofuturism, because I wanted people, one, to know the term, and two, if they connected with those ideas, to realize that they weren't alone, that they were part of a larger continuum, and that there's a lot of people working with these ideas today, and in some cases now more mainstream ways, but, you know, also, you know, creating a lot of independent works with excited audiences.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you there, Natasha. I think also that I always say for many of us who are in our second career, I think that it's also an opportunity to look at some of our younger teenagers and kids that may have a desire to be writers, have a desire to do movies, but may not have an opportunity. And I always talk about this because even when I was working at the college, there was a perception that everyone that came to college had a computer, had the use of a computer. And then, you know, we would get these students and find out and realize that everyone doesn't have access like we believe they do. And so, you know, there's some programs I've been looking at lately where they're realizing that they actually have to go knock on the doors and really talk to parents, because it's not always just a parent, you know, parents are not helping children. It's just that some parents don't have the opportunity and may not understand like their children understand. Your children are always way ahead of you in a lot of things, okay?
Sometimes it's
our response. Yeah, it's our response to that sometimes. It's you know, my mother's response was she didn't know what to do with a daughter that read everything. But she did go out and buy me a set of encyclopedias to like, you know, she's like, well, I know you like to read, so let me give you these, which was really awesome because they were worldwide encyclopedias, and then they were the classics. So, you know, had this huge imagination, and that was great. But every parent doesn't have that. That's just the honest truth. Every parent doesn't have that. And you have to recognize, you know, if you, wherever you are in your place, what can you go back to the community and do, and not, you know, and not be afraid to go knock on doors. The one project I saw in Atlanta recently, they had a lot of kids that were literally leaving school. And they were like, how do we help these students? So they started going out to meet the parents. It was interesting. They found out that, you know, families had issues where either they were getting evicted, they may have been dealing with landlords, they weren't fixing the house, they may have been living in, you know, just terrible conditions that they felt they had no control over. And what they did is they partnered with lawyers all over Atlanta, and said, you know, we have to help these parents. And literally they have seen an increase in percentage of students that are staying in school, and parents are able to put more effort into helping their children succeed because they're not worried about things that they have no control over. So I thought that was an awesome program. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that a lot more of us that are in the film industry, you know, in literature and, you know, in these areas that we have the experience and we have the opportunity that even if we reach back to one who has, you know, this, and I don't say disadvantaged kids. I said these are the kids that are just awesome, just have this great creative ability, but they just, you know, the parents don't have the money to put them in a program that will help them, you know, achieve these things, or they don't have the opportunity. So, you know, for us to be able to recognize who they are and pull them forward, I think is really important. I think it's important to encourage those of us that are, you know, in college or even out of college to run for even elections in our own, you know, state or city. I was really fascinated by Ingrid LaFleur and what she had done with Afrotopia in Detroit. In a lot of ways, Detroit has done some things for creative individuals that is just, it's amazing. They even have a section where they took some old homes that nobody was living in and they were torn down, and they went in and they just restored one home at a time. And it actually is a writer's community. And the requirements to live there and to own a house, which, you know, you get the house pretty much as free, the requirement is that you live there 2 years and participate in the writer community, which I thought was really amazing. But they're doing some of these things to promote ways for African Americans to be able to do some more of their creative inspiration, but at the same time working into public works and social programs to help move the culture forward. So I think what, you know, what Black Panther did as well is that it just really, you know, like you said, Patrick, it gave such a huge push of energy. And I think it's, you know, really dependent on us to not let that energy wane.
Yes. Yes. You're right.
So, yeah. So, you know, definitely, you know, I'm really glad to have all of you on the program, because I think this is something, certainly for me, Afrofuturism, definitely more encouraging to see what I'm seeing on television, what I'm seeing on platforms like Netflix. So what do you think about Netflix platform and being able to show more programs of African Americans? I would say, one thing I would say is they've gotten much, much better. Okay. And I haven't seen any other platforms yet to do as much as Netflix when it comes to the not only to African Americans, but to Hispanics, to foreign films from Nigeria. I've seen some really good work out there. So what do you think about this new platform? Do you think this is going to be one of the platforms that we should look at first because I know we're like, we don't pay attention to Hollywood right now. what are some of the movie platforms that you think we should focus on?
I think that Netflix, just as Vimeo, just as YouTube, has opened up distribution channels and shows that I was watching a masterclass from Spike Lee recently, and he was basically mm-hmm. saying, or he was encouraging folks and saying, listen, you don't have to get a degree in order to do filmmaking. What you have to do is have a powerful vision and then use the tools that are mm-hmm. at your disposal. And I think that Netflix demonstrates that. Prior to this, people would think, oh, I have to go to a major cinema and I have to have distribution through any of the major film studios. And to Brother Ishmael Reed's point earlier, it really, he said a lot of stuff is getting made outside of the main system. You just have to have the courage to do it. I would say that people like Yatasha Womack with her films, also Tori Reid in preaching about self-love and what that is. You don't have to wait for other folks on the outside to validate you, to validate who you are. And I think to Netflix, I think it creates a new paradigm outside of the Hollywood industrial system that says, hey, if you have the initiative, if you have the vision, and you've got the power and the energy of your story, put it out there into the world. Netflix, just came out, maybe within the last 2 years, has become a creative force where all of a sudden you have major actors and major studios such as Will Smith, putting their projects directly on Netflix. I think it encourages you to come out with the authenticity of your voice and be who you are.
Mhm. Right. I do too, Patrick. Thank you. So, are there any other thoughts that our panel has today that they'd like to convey while we're on this subject today? Tori or Yatasha?
I just think that it's most important that people, either continue to create or continue to explore the subjects that they found fascinating about Black Panther. Don't stop there. So if there is an interest that audiences have where they want to see more sci-fi, or more sci-fi, from an African or Latino perspective or indigenous perspective or just other takes, just be more proactive about finding those works. And if there were subjects within the movie Black Panther around history or around physics or any kind of the sciences that are exciting to you, then, go and explore those interests. There are a host of groups and people and books and works where you can read more about these subjects and you can engage and have conversations about them. So I think mm-hmm. if you're an Afrofuturist or you're a person who likes looking at the relationships between science and art and mysticism, then, this is a great time to really let that flourish and connect with people around these ideas.
Great.
Yeah. And I'd like to add, too, I totally agree with what Natasha said. And I'd like to add, I heard Issa Rae's story and how she got started. And I think, one, like Natasha said, to create, I think the time is now. And because we have so many more avenues, such as Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, a lot of the cable shows, I hate to say it, but it's like we're in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are in.
Yeah.
It is what it is as far as Hollywood is concerned. So, and I think that when Issa Rae said she got started, she just had her people, her tribe, her friends, and she said they got together and created, the internet show, which then became one of the biggest, most successful HBO series right now,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, Yatasha, she's right, and I would just add that. I think that if we could just come together, not if, we are, but just our friends,
yes,
our producers,
yes.
One's a writer. Yes, we are. Yes, we be. Just come together, writers, producers, directors, and do our own thing. I mean, especially now with the technology on the phone, you can shoot a whole movie on a phone now. You really can, and get it out there.
Yeah, you really can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Issa Rae is a perfect example of starting small, and then, you know, now she's on HBO, and she's one of the most sought-after actresses right now. So,
uh-huh.
And she just did it. She just created with her friends. Yeah.
I think that's a great point. I think that's a great point because we have seen individuals in our, you know, well, for Vertical, we have seen individuals that we've talked to a few years back that are actually, you know, on TV now and are, you know, living their dreams. They started shooting their series on YouTube and gave them an opportunity to shoot it in a movie. So we are seeing that. So and it's interesting, this conversation, because it just brought to mind that I just talked to a director, a producer director for a long time who kind of semi-retired, and he said to me that he was looking at starting a master class for screenwriters, but he wanted to really target minority screenwriters. And it was interesting, the conversation, he said, because he just felt that when we're in school learning how to do screenwriting, that sometimes it just doesn't fit the training doesn't fit our narrative. And I was telling him, I'm like, oh my, you were so right. And so this could be a great encouragement for him to, you know, to do that. Just, you know, bring it out of the thought phase and actually do it. Because there's more people out there that are, you know, that are looking for something like that. And I totally agree with you in there. So, Patrick, you have any last thoughts today for our program?
I think it's already been stated by Tori in the last few minutes, and definitely by Yatasha and also yourself, Celeste. You know, just keep doing what we're doing. I think that we've got the wind behind our backs. I think that it's going to be that way for the foreseeable future. I've said in previous shows, you know, what just happened with the election of you know, Barnum and Bailey's last, you know, big flourish in America. It's just Custer's last stand. It's really Custer's mm-hmm. last stand. And even though there's a lot of, you know, just things that we never thought we would see in terms of the White House, I'm trying to keep it light and not get too heavy right now, you know, in terms of whatever, that's them defining them. And we need to sit there and lead the way and be inclusive. You know, we've mentioned Latinos, we've mentioned Asians. I think that we need to think also about, you know, Italian-American, Irish-Americans, because a lot of the folks that I do business with on a day-by-day basis, even my partner out of Newport Beach inside of my investor relations business, I'm of a different persuasion, but they're brothers in spirit, mind, and body. And so we need to be inclusive and just move the ball forward. The wind's behind our back. The ancestors have built us for where we are right now, and we're going to continue to move strong. It is no accident that we're on the phone today doing what we're doing on your show, Celeste. Thank you for your leadership and your guidance. It's no accident that we are speaking together. I think to Tori's point earlier inside of the conversation, we need to continue to come together. To Yatasha's point earlier inside of our conversation, Afrofuturism is something, it's a big tent that is really a creative energy or a creative force inside of the universe. So let's just continue to move with it. We're at the beginning. We are at the beginning of what we're doing.
Yeah. Great. But I do want to thank Tori. I want to thank Natasha, Ishmael Reed, that was on our show. We had to go. But I want to thank all of you for being a part of the program. I hope that in the future we can have you again and talk about, you know, and talk about what, you know, what you're doing and new projects, and talk about where we come from. So thank you again for everyone being a part of our program. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
And thank you for our audience who are supportive of Vertical Live Radio.
I think we're hearing Natasha there. I think she's saying goodbye as well.
Okay. All right. So thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Celeste.
You all right, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you. Bye, all.